and that there's something wrong. Went into the kitchen to find the food was gone. Went to the bedroom and put on my clothes. Walked into the street to find the shops were closed. There were no trams a-running and the petrol was all gone. People in a panic, all hysterical and crying. So we all yelled out, forgive us.
G'day fellow white Aussies and welcome to episode 4 of the Australian Racist News Report. This podcast dissects Australian news stories, most of them recent but a few older stories, from a racial and biblical perspective. This episode was posted on the ChristianIdentityForum.net on the 28th of August 2015. I'm Obadiah 118, or Obi if you want to cut back on typing, and I am your host. What is Christian identity? It's just another name for Christianity. The reason we add the word identity is that true Christianity, not to be confused with Judeo-Christianity, identifies the two major peoples in the Bible, the children of God and the children of the devil. The former are Adamites, descendants of Adam, who God subdivided into the Hebrews, who would later be known as Israelites and are now known as white Europeans. And the latter are descendants of Cain, who've gone by many different names down through history, such as Kenites, Canaanites, Edomites, and are now universally known as Jews. For a graduate education in who the Israelites of the Bible are, and who those who say they are Jews but are not are, I've posted a number of books on the subjects in PDF format in the Christian Identity Primer section of my forum. You can read the books online or download them, or you can read them online and download them if you want, I don't mind.
Mr. McKenzie, I'm a priest. I'm also a homosexual. My gay liberation colleagues in Australia tell me there is employment discrimination against us. Speaking as a churchman and humanitarian, where would you place me in Australia?
Well, I reckon somewhere around King's Cross in one of them all-night dunnies.
Before we get into this episode's main topic, I have an exciting announcement to make. I have developed a revolutionary new psychological test called the What a Fag Test. The test is very simple. You sit somebody down in front of a TV and make him watch the first couple of minutes of a report the Australian version of 60 Minutes showed last Sunday night, the 23rd of August 2015. What that person will see is a young man, though I'm loath to use the word man, by the name of Jack Andraka stand up in the middle of a crowded auditorium and make his way to a stage to accept a prestigious science award he's won. But it's how he makes his way to the stage that forms the crux of the test. He squeals like a schoolgirl as he minces and rattles his hands and shakes and doubles over and almost swoons from the overwhelming excitement of it all. To call his body language effeminate would be like calling the Great Wall of China a garden fence. It would be a gross understatement. So you get the person to watch this clip, and if he doesn't say, "What a fag," no more than 3 seconds into it, then either that person has been brainwashed into believing that fags are normal, or is a fag himself. Last December, Australia became the focus of world media attention when a Muslim terrorist held the customers of a Sydney cafe hostage. The siege lasted until the early hours of the following morning when the Muslim, Man Haron Monis, and two whites were shot dead. One of the hostages, Tory Johnson, was killed by Monis, and the other, Katrina Dawson, was killed by fragments from a police bullet. Later that morning, the media was busy portraying the terrorist as a lone nut with a history of mental health issues, who was a Muslim in name only. After all, no sane Muslim would ever do something as crazy as Monis had. Just ask the thousands of Muslim suicide bombers. After the incident, Aussies were lamenting how the country had lost its innocence, seeing that this was the first attack of its kind on Australian soil. But it wasn't. In fact, this year marks the 100th anniversary of the actual first Muslim terrorist attack in Australia. This long-forgotten act of Muslim terrorism is deliberately ignored by politicians and the media, who don't want us to go tarring Muzzies with the same brush. This is from an article called The 100th Anniversary of First Islamic Attack in Australia, and it's written by Bernard Gaynor. Quote, "Of the hundreds of commemorations that will take place to remember Australian sacrifice during World War I, there is only one that can remember life taken on Australian soil. But due to political correctness, there will be no official commemoration of it at all. I am referring to the Battle of Broken Hill, in which 4 Australians lost their lives, none of whom were in uniform, and 7 more were wounded. It started, as these things mostly do, with the sound of Allahu Akbar ringing out. This time it was on the outskirts of Broken Hill. The date was the 1st of January 1915. Shortly thereafter, 2 men began shooting at a train taking 1,200 men, women and children to the annual New Year's Day picnic. What was supposed to be a family day of fun was turned into a raging chaos of carnage. The 2 perpetrators were Ghul Muhammad and Mullah Abdullah. And no, don't judge them by their names. Instead, just read their suicide notes, written as they prepared for their lead role and walk-on part in the war in Australia. Mullah Abdullah's note said that his actions were in obedience to the order of the Sultan of the Quran, and he signed it off with an oath to Allah and Muhammad's Big Book of Peace. As Mullah Abdullah was the local imam of the first mosque ever built in New South Wales, it's fair to say that he knew a little more about the Quran and Allah than your average New Age journalist writing fairy tales about the religion of peace today. Mullah Abdullah was also responsible for the local trade in halal meat, which had twice been shut down because he had been found guilty of butchering sheep without a license. So in his note, Abdullah also stated that he was also going to kill the local inspector, who says halal certification is not linked with terror. Now, Islamic apologists are quick to claim that Abdullah's grudge with the inspector is proof that Islam did not really have much to do with the Battle of Broken Hill. In response, I will point out that halal lamb chops are very much part of Islamic life, and that Abdullah's disdain for the law regarding animal slaughter a century ago very much resembles the disdain that modern-day Australian Muslims have for today's laws, such as those prohibiting marriage to 12-year-old girls. And besides, the Islam Australia Network defends Abdullah's actions because he was subject to religious persecution. In fact, the Islam Australia Network claims that Muslims were placed in an impossible situation because they were required to obtain a license to slaughter animals, like every other Australian butcher. The good news from Abdullah's point of view is that more than half of Australia's lamb chops are now halal certified. He did not die in vain, but was just the first to give his life to impose Sharia law on the rest of Australian society. And I suppose some would say it's not a bad thing either. We don't want any other trains coming into contact with weapon-yielding maniacs crying Allahu Akbar on a warm and sunny New Year's morning. That usually ends in tears for all involved. Of course, in order to keep the peace, we've had to hand control of meat slaughter and production to Islamic police intent on imposing Sharia law and Islamic taxes on all. And that is a little costly in other ways. Some meat producers are coughing up $27,000 a month for the privilege of being halal certified. That fee is used to fund Islamic schools in Indonesia and the cost is passed on directly to the consumer. That's you. Just remember, next time you tuck into an Australian steak, there's a good chance that you are not only paying GST, but an Islamic tax as well. And somewhere in all of this, Broken Hill's Mullah Abdullah can take a certain degree of responsibility. The other murderer, Ghul Muhammad, was not an imam and, like Abdullah, he was not Turkish. Ghul was Broken Hill's ice cream vendor, one of the first Mr. Whippies, if you will. And just as all good horror stories seem to have an evil ice cream man somewhere in the script, this one is no different. That's because Ghul was a good Muslim, upset that Great Britain and the Empire was at war with the Islamic Caliphate. As one modern Islamic author has noted, some Australian Muslims felt this decision was horrendous, and other Australian Muslims are a little more blunt. Hizb ut-Tahrir stated just last year that if Anzac Day should commemorate anything, it should celebrate the defeat of immoral Australian forces at the hands of the Islamic Caliphate. I guess this kind of puts a different slant on the name of Australia's largest mosque, standing tall and defined in Western Sydney, the Gallipoli Mosque. There can be no doubt that its name symbolises the Caliphate's victory over Australia to groups like Hizb ut-Tahrir. They probably regard it as the greatest inside joke of them all. As Gul prepared to die, he also penned a note. It stated, quote, "I must kill your men and give my life for my faith by order of the Sultan," unquote. Then Gul drove his weapon-laden ice cream cart to the outskirts of Broken Hill and waited with his imam for a trainload of civilian targets to pass by. By the end of the day, Gul and Abdullah were both dead. So were four civilians, including a 17-year-old girl. Seven more were wounded. It was lucky the toll was not higher. And then, just like today, came the typically stupid response to an act of Islamic violence. As night closed in, the German club in Broken Hill was burnt to the ground. It is ironic that 100 years to the day after the first Islamic suicide attack in Australia, police will be on the lookout for other acts of Islamic terrorism against Australians celebrating New Year's Day. We have deliberately chosen to ignore the lesson of the past. So do not be surprised when new families suffer the death of their children, wives and husbands at the hands of those who think that screaming out Allahu Akbar while wielding a weapon is the ticket to heaven. It is the price this nation will pay for deliberately forgetting that those who hate us have killed us before, and on our home soil. Unquote. Folks, Muslims were our deadly enemies 100 years ago, and they're our deadly enemies today. They haven't changed a lick. Why do you think the Jews are so hell-bent on flooding our countries with Muslims? Do you think they're doing that because the Muslims are going to team up with us to defeat them? They're doing it because they know that Muslims intend to kill us. The Jews have been using Muslims as their attack dogs for hundreds of years, sicking them on whites since the days of Charles Martel and Queen Isabella. Nothing has changed because Jews haven't changed and Muslims haven't changed. Their biology travels with them wherever they go. Whenever Muslims commit an act of violence against a white Australian or some, quote, fanatical Muslim leader, unquote, makes a statement condoning acts of terrorism or the imposition of Sharia law here, the Australian media always runs to the same Muslim apologist for a comment. That apologist is Kazar Trad, who is supposed to speak for all the so-called moderate Muslims in this country. Trad is like the proverbial broken record. He will always insist that the offending Muslims represent only a very small minority of the Muslim community here, and that Islam is a glorious religion of peace whose followers, like himself, are moderates who wish to harm no one and only want to make a positive contribution to Australian society. Incidentally, that's what the greatest philosophers down through history have called BS. The question is, if Islam is such a great religion, why does it need spokespeople like Trad to tell us how great it is? If something or someone is truly great, its greatness will be self-evident. I don't need a spokesman for the sun to tell me how great a sunny day is. The second I feel that sunlight beaming down on my face, I know how great it is. I don't need a spokesman for beautiful white women to tell me how great beautiful white women look. My eyes will tell me all I need to know. Muslims need spokespeople just like Jews and Sodomites need spokespeople, because they and their sham religion are bad for whites, are harmful to whites. That basic truth ought to be obvious to every sincere white nationalist by now, I would think. Not that long ago, say 5 years ago, there were a number of people in the white nationalist movement who truly believed that whites should ally themselves with the Muslims to defeat the Jews. Most of those people no longer feel that way, I'm glad to say, and the reason they don't is that they've seen all of the mayhem and social upheaval that large numbers of Muslims create in white countries. But despite all of that, there are still some people who would have us believe they're white nationalists, who spend far more time bemoaning what the Jews, who are non-whites, are doing to the Palestinians, who are also non-white. If these faux white nationalists really love their people, white people, why are they so concerned about the Palestinians? Could they be enemy agents working to turn our attention away from far more important matters? the survival of our race being one, and to get us to feel sorry for the Palestinians, so we'll view them as potential allies and welcome them into our countries. Frankly, I couldn't care less what the Jews do to the Palestinians or vice versa. I hope they wipe each other out. I wouldn't shed a tear. I've seen the damage the Jews and the Palestinians have done to white civilization. There is some controversy as to who and what a Palestinian is, since Palestine is a region that takes in a number of different countries. But basically, they're of Arab descent. Has Australia or any white country benefited from having Arabs settle in it? In regards to all the whites who cry their eyes out over the poor Palestinian children being blown to bits by the Israelis, their tears are cried in vain. If those children had lived, many of them would end up in white countries, where in 10 years' time they would rape and kill our people and control a large slice of organised crime, as their older kinsmen do now. 50% of organised crime in Australia, for example, is controlled by Lebanese. All of these rapists, murderers and members of criminal gangs were once children themselves. How much better off would we have been if they too had been killed over in the Middle East? Now you can call me cruel and heartless all you like, but the fact of the matter is that I'm just being a racist. I love my race and only my race. I am not concerned in the least about the welfare of other races. In the same way, they're not concerned in the least about the welfare of mine. Do you think when blacks, Asians or Arabs get together that they spend even a second fretting over our misfortunes? Come off it. Do I hate all non-white races? Let me put it to you this way. When they're in their own countries, I neither hate nor like them. But the instant they set foot in mine, I wish all of them would drop down dead. Every man, woman and child of them. Because left to their own devices for long enough, they'll destroy my race through demographic conquest, miscegenation and outright violence. So you can bawl about what's happening to the Palestinians and the Palestinian children all you like, but I shall save my tears for my own race, thank you very much. That way they won't be wasted. And on that note, folks, I'll say God bless and God willing, I'll be back next week.
Listen now to me, if you want to be with the right religion, enlightened and so free. Iraq, there for a start, being Christian isn't smart. They may burn down your churches or stab you through the heart. Jihad bills, jihad bills, jihad all the way. Oh, what fun with a knife or gun, a Christian guy to slay. Oh, jihad bills, coming up your way. Oh, what fun, look what we've done from Paris to Norway. The Saudis, yes, my friend, they lead us in the trend. To flog you if you're Christian, lock you up until the end. No Bible, please, no Pope, and you'll comply, we hope. Or otherwise we'll teach you to bungee with no rope. Oh, jihad bills, jihad bills, jihad all the way. Oh, what fun with a knife or gun, a Christian guy to slay. Oh, jihad bills, coming up your way. Oh, what fun, look what we've done from Paris to Norway. In Egypt, don't you try converting on the sly. In Tehran, it's simple, they stone you till you die. The Sudanese, the brave, there if you misbehave and practice Christianity, they sell you as a slave. Jihad bells, jihad bells, jihad all the way. Oh, what fun with a knife or gun, a Christian guy to slay. Jihad bells, coming up your way. Oh, what fun, look what we've done from Paris to Norway. Somalia, they have class, they'll burn you very fast. In Gaza, if you're Christian, you'd better pray your last. Now here in the PA, Bethlehem, where you pray, it used to be a Christian town, we drove them all away. Oh, jihad bells, jihad bells, jihad all the way. Oh, what fun with a bomb or gun, bad Christian blown away. Jihad bells, coming up your way. Oh, what fun when we are done from Moscow to LA.